Blog Talk Radio.
I would like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio. This is our November the 25th, 2017 show. My special guest tonight is John Morgan. John Morgan is a fingerstyle guitarist out of the Central Ohio area. You can reach John on his website, morganguitar.com. He's on Facebook and Twitter, CD Baby, Reverb Nation. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, John. Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you on. We've been doing this little journey through music for quite a few years, and it's an honor to talk to someone of your talent that uses their talents in such a way that it's just amazing to me how that you help other people. And for the listeners out there, John is a artist in residence at Riverside Hospital, and he has been a professional musician for many years. And I just think it's so honorable, John, to use your talents to help other people. And he plays music and plays his guitar for people that are in the oncology department, that are going through cancer, and that are battling the battle of their life. And we just really thank you for what you're doing. I think it's incredible. A lot of people use their talents for different ways, John, but I really appreciate what you're doing.
Well,
and I'd like for you. Yeah, go ahead.
It's really a privilege, you know, to be able to have that opportunity. I feel like, you know, sometimes, as people say, God opens a door for you. And it's just really been a wonderful privilege to be able to play for people and see how music can impact people when they're going through probably the hardest thing in their life. So I just feel very fortunate to have the door open and to be able to see the power of music impacting people.
How did you get started in that, John?
Well, it's kind of funny. I tell people I kind of Forrest Gumped it. I kind of just stumbled into it. A friend of mine was starting a music program at Grant Hospital here in Central Ohio, and she said, "Now you only have to play like 1 hour every 2 months." She said, "I've got 8 musicians lined up, and we'll all do a week. You know, and it'll be on a Tuesday morning and such and such." So, you know, I did that for several years, and at that time, I had just left the corporate world and was beginning to do music full-time with lessons, teaching, and that sort of thing. And so I thought, well, I'll do that, and, you know, we'll see how it goes. Well, after a couple years, it turned out that I was the only one in the rotation that was still showing up. And a lady who was the art, yeah, it was kind of funny. I would, you know, always, I'd like to talk to the housekeeping people to find out what's really going on in the world. And this one lady says, "Well, we sure enjoy hearing you. You're the only one that's still coming." So I thought, okay. And then the lady who was the artist in residence at another hospital, Riverside, here in Central Ohio, where the two hospitals are related, she said, "When I get a budget, I'm going to get you up to Riverside to play." And I said, "Just let me know." And sure enough, a couple years later, she gave me a call, and she had the budget and brought me on board there.
Now, how does that work, John? Well, we're going to talk about, you know, your career and how you got started and all that, go to the beginning. But I kind of interesting to me how this works. Do you do this in a group setting where like they will come to listen to you in a group? Do you go to the rooms? Do you play music that original music from you? Do you play songs that they like? How does that work?
Wow, those are great questions. There are basically three different areas where I play. And one is inpatient treatment. And these are folks that are going to be in the hospital. It may be for a few days. It may be for an extended period of time. And in that situation, I have a certain the oncology area, which is consists of a couple long hallways. And what I'll do there, because, well, I'll tell you more in a second, but what I do there is I'll begin playing instrumental music, similar to the piece that you just played to open the show with. And, you know, it'll just be kind of relaxing and peaceful, because a large part of what I'm trying to do is bring a little bit of relaxation into a difficult, you know, situation where people are. But what will happen, you know, you're playing guitar in a hospital, and all of a sudden somebody will stick their head out the door, and they'll kind of have a quizzical look on their face, and they'll say, "Hey, could you come in and play for my dad, or could you do this or that?" And so what happens, and, you know, also when I first started, you know, I've learned a lot since I've been doing this. When I first started, I would just knock on doors. And then I realized that's a little bit like the nurse coming in and say, "Hey, wake up. It's time for your sleeping pill." You know, so, oh, wait, maybe if I'm playing relaxing music, I should let people relax. So, and what I've found is that people who are interested, they'll peek out the door. Occasionally I've had a, hello out there. And somebody will invite me in. And then at that point, it's just a human encounter. And I'll say something like, "Well, what kind of music do you enjoy?" And I've gotten everything from, "Well, can you play some classical music?" to, "Can you play Johnny Cash?" And fortunately, in my background, I've been exposed to all kinds of stuff, and, you know, and had a chance to borrow a little bit from many different musical genres. And I mean, it's funny. When I first started, this is what I wanted to tell you, when I started doing this, And, you know, my understanding of cancer was like next to nothing, because I thought, well, if a person has measles, they have a certain set of characteristics, and so every person who has measles will have a certain set of characteristics, and that's what you'll encounter. Cancer is a disease, so with cancer, there should be a certain set of characteristics, and everybody will be the same. And only to find that, no, there are so many different types of cancer and different parts of the body that it can affect, and everybody's situation is different. So not only when I go into when I go from room to room, it's not only a different world, it's almost sometimes a different universe.
Wow.
And so part of the fun of it, because, you know, a disease like this does not discriminate rich or poor, you know, racially in any other kind of way. So I get to meet all different kinds of people. And then the thing is, how do you bring this thing we call music so that it's relevant to that person in the situation? And usually, because music, the way it affects our brains, the things that we like, that we've heard maybe over and over through the years, in a certain sense, they cut grooves through our brain. They're neurological pathways that they make. So the closer I can get to a style of music that a person likes and is familiar with, the more enjoyment on the surface level, but also music triggers endorphins and dopamines and these drugs that help us just plain old feel good. I mean, we all kind of know that when we hear music, it lifts our spirits, it helps us feel good. But there's a really physiological results that happen when we play music. And if I can get a step beyond that, and if somebody feels like singing along, that even triggers more of that, because music isn't just there, you know, it's not like, hey, let's go to the hospital, we'll have a little music party. It's really there to bring healing and by promoting the chemical reactions that happen in a person's brain. It actually enhances the healing process. And so, you know, it's just amazing, but there's not like one magic song. It's like, how do you connect with what is important to that person? How do you hook up with those neurological pathways that will bring that sense of joy to them? That the reactions are always interesting and different. Sometimes the music will cause a person to think, well, you know, my dad, my uncle, my aunt, somebody in their family in the past used to play music, and then that'll take them and open up a lot of these really warm and pleasant memories from childhood or from when they were a teenager or whatever part of life. And it's just been amazing to see how music kind of unlocks that. And as people talk about those experiences, it just enhances the whole effect of what's going on.
It's got to be amazing, John, for you to witness that and to see that happening for a person that may be sitting in their room with nothing to do but worry about their condition or what's going to happen in the future or what's going to happen to their family, and then to have something positive. Music is such a spiritual thing. You were talking about how it affects people mentally and physically, and it does all of those. And I think it's incredible to me because I know what you're talking about. I can hear a song, and that can like go so deep down. It'll bring up memories of things, and it will make me think, and it will encourage me. And sometimes it will make you sad, and sometimes it will stir your emotions. So in music therapy, and when doctors have figured out, and, you know, hospitals and nurses, that this is really just more than a distraction, this is really something that can help somebody, you know, coming into your room and playing and singing and all that could be really cool. And I think that would just that alone would be good. But also to be able to touch somebody into a place where now they're starting to think that possibly my mind's off of everything and I'm starting to feel this energy or this feel good about this. Does it have any connection, John, to when you're playing for these patients for like confidence and maybe strength to continue? I mean, I know that it's not easy to do, and I know that my daughter is a therapist, she's a social worker, and we talk a lot about how art can build confidence and help kids that are just lost, totally lost.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? I mean, when you reach somebody in that, wow, it's like going beyond their ears, you know, it's like now we're going into that person's heart and soul.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's really the purpose of this kind of therapy and art therapy. And really there's a lot of similar things that are all in that artistic realm. But, you know, sometimes I jokingly tell people, at a minimum, I'm a distraction. Because like you say, when somebody is really sick, and oftentimes these are life and death kind of situations, you know, there's so many things that could worry you. And then, you know, I've just seen when a person, you can almost read it on their face, there's just this worry and concern, and oftentimes the loved ones will be in a room with them, or if it's in a radiation area in like a lobby, you know, their loved ones have come with them as a support, or in the chemo area, this a similar thing. And you can tell they're concerned about that, but then this music, at a minimum, we're not worrying anymore. For this 10 or 15 minutes, we're thinking about pleasant things, we're thinking about music. But again, sometimes, I was playing for a lady last week, and she said, can you play some old hymns for me? And I said, you know, well, like Amazing Grace, and she said, oh, yeah. So I played that one, and she sang along, and that was really good.
Oh, wow.
And she asked for another one, and she said, I got halfway through the first verse, and she was just crying and sobbing. And I'm going, oh. So, you know, I just pat her on the back and say, hey. She said, well, you know, and then she just opened up, and she said, when I was a young girl in church, these elderly women are the ones that taught me how to sing and how to be in the choir, and doing that song just brought all that up. And even though, you know, in a sense they were tears of sorrow, there was also that cleansing and that, and then, you know, when you get through that, you do feel a sense of, you know, we're going to make it. Those ladies that taught me how to sing, they were an example to me of, you know, how you persevere. And it was just, it takes the mind off of those negative thoughts, and music gives us this reason to carry on, because it's connecting us to the past and hoping it's given us a more positive view of the future.
Now, I don't have the talent to do what you do, but I can imagine, John, if I was in your shoes, I would have to battle with my own emotions, knowing that playing the music that is touching somebody and that seeing their emotions, is that ever something that comes up with you? Or are you like, oh, you know, I've done this before, I'm a professional, I can do this? Because there are times when music will just flat out knock me to a point where it's like, wow, that's really emotional. I don't even know if I can talk right now or I can deal with that at an emotional level. How does that work? Because, you know, you're this is pretty serious stuff, and you're, you know, bringing this beautiful relief and message to these people that are having a really rough time, and then they're receiving this emotional contact from you. I just wondered how that affects you sometimes.
Oh, well, you're asking some awfully perceptive questions here, John. Because there's a certain sense, I mean, where when you're doing this thing, you want to be professional, and you can't, you know, have your emotions on your sleeve, because everybody you meet in the situation, almost everybody, is pretty serious. So, and you kind of know that going in. But at this, so you want to, you know, I kind of follow the cue of the nurses. The nurses and the techs that work there, they maintain a positive attitude. They have smiles on their faces. They're real examples, and they're dealing with these people right in the nitty-gritty of it. And,
yeah.
But there are times when you are playing, there's this emotional connection. And I've had, you know, it's not too uncommon that, well, let me tell you a little story. A couple weeks ago, no, it's probably been a month or two now, there's a gentleman, he said, hey, do you know anything by George Jones? And I'm going, because I take a tablet with me, you know, an electronic tablet, and I've got like thousands of songs on there that I've figured out for students over the years and that I can play for people. So, and I'm going, oh my gosh, George Jones, I've got three songs in my George Jones directory. One is White Lightning. That would not be appropriate. Two is The Race Is On. The Race Is On, that's a good one. The Grateful Dead did versions of that. But the third one is he stopped loving her today.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm going, and that's one about a guy who was in love with a woman and their relationship was rocky, and he said, I'll love you till I die. And then the gist of the song is he stopped loving her today because he just passed away.
Yep.
So this gentleman who's in a bed receiving treatment and his wife is right there with him, I said, oh, yeah, I know some George Jones. What do you like? And I'm hoping for The Race Is On. He says, well, how about can you do He Stopped Loving Her Today? And I'm going, oh, my gosh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I can do that one for you.
Yeah,
and
that
so
gets
I'm
me just
it.
In a regular situation, John.
Yeah, and just let me say, there was not a dry eye in the room when I finished that. But yet, he was kind of, there's a thing about like grieving. When a person is really sick, if the loved ones are with you and supporting you, and if you can grieve before the person passes away, that can really help with a lot of the healing. And so that's kind of what this guy was doing. And, it was just tough. And obviously he was familiar with the song and what it was about. And so I thought, wow. But like I said, sometimes we just say, crying is a way to kind of wash your insides out. It helps you feel better. And then letting those emotions out, that's okay. And music is an emotional, spiritual language. And if you're going to deal in that, then you don't want to be just going around sobbing all the time. That is not encouraging, because you want to convey a positive message, and generally, that's most of what you do. Hey, we're going to get through this. But there are times when tears are appropriate, and let's just say this is life. This is what we go through, and music helps us address those things.
Absolutely. My guest is John Morgan, and you can go on his website, morganguitar.com. And we're talking about John's musical career and what he's doing as a artist in residence at Riverside Hospital. And we're going to play another song, and then we're going to come back and talk to John about how things got started and how he started out in music. And I always like to do that. I usually start with that, John, but we just kind of went this way because I really feel, wow, this is taking music to a point where it's like it's just such a healing instrument, and I think it's just a great thing to talk about. So we're going to play another one of John's albums. John, I gave the website of morganguitar.com, and if people want to buy your downloaded music or your CDs, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Well, CD Baby, you can get CDs on there, cdbaby.com. You can also iTunes. I don't know if people even buy physical products anymore, so you can find my music on Spotify and, again, on iTunes. And so stream, download. If you want physical product, you can hit my website, morganguitar.com. So those are the best ways.
And we will talk a little bit when we come back from break, John, about the music industry. And you talked about the physical products that were so big in the past, and now we've gone into this Star Trek place where, you can't – music is – it's just incredible to me. I mean, I talk about how important LPs were to me and albums were to me. And growing up in Central Ohio, for me to get an album was a big deal. And now kids can just hit a button and hear every song in the world.
It's an amazing world.
It is. It's really cool. Well, let's play. Let's play Frog Jump Trio. And would you like to talk about that? We started off the show with, what did we, yes, I got it right here.
Castle in the Clouds.
Castle in the Clouds. If you'd like to talk about that, and also if you'd like to talk about Frog Jump Trio, and we've got like a million things to talk about because we want to talk about your finger style of playing and all that, and maybe these songs you could talk about that, about what you were when you were writing these songs, what you were just kind of set it up for us.
Castle in the Clouds. My first CD was called The Journey Places Real and Imagined. And that turned out to be, those are songs, when I say songs, they're all instrumental, but I think of them as songs. And they were really a musical biography of where I grew up in Southern Ohio, a little town called Gallipolis. So Castle in the Clouds, right if I went out my back door and just across this small field, there was a hill, and it was steep enough hill that the people would never cut the grass on it. They just let it grow, and it was the kind of place where that was no problem. And as a kid, we would go over there and make little trails or little hiding places, such as it were. And so that Castle in the Clouds was kind of a daydreamy song about laying there, you know, on this little hillside with grass about, you know, 2 or 3 feet tall, which to us like is probably 10 feet tall, and just looking up into the clouds, and you know how you see imaginary figures in clouds. So
right.
It's just kind of a dreamy little song like that. Now, Frog Jump Trail, it's kind of funny. My last studio CD was called Quiet World, and I had a number of people involved in that, playing music and stuff. So the process for recording took about a year and a half, just with schedules and one thing and another. So about three-quarters of the way through that, I'm going, my goodness, I can put out a CD faster than this. So I went down to my home studio, and I set up a bunch of tracks, turn on the click track, and just ad-libbed. And I told a buddy of mine about that and let him hear some of the stuff, and I just forgot about it for about 6 months. And then he said, hey, what'd you ever do with that? I said, well, I didn't do anything with it. So you ought to put that out. So what it was, Frog Jump Trail was one of the cuts that I just did as an ad-lib, just, you know, it's like making some stuff up because the studio process was taking so long. So it just reminded me of, again, kind of playing in a stream, you know, Frog Jump Trail. You're out in nature. You're watching, you know, aquatic animals, salamanders, frogs, what have you. And it's just kind of a joyful little tune with some interesting, I hope, interesting musical twists and turns to it.
And we'll be right back with John Morgan after this. And I would like to welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio, our November the 25th, 2017 episode. We've been doing this since November of 2008, and we really appreciate our guest tonight, John Morgan. You can go on morganguitar.com. We just heard Frog Jump Trail, beautiful song, John.
Oh, thank you
for that. Yeah, it's just awesome. I love that. Let's talk about the beginning. In the beginning, how did you get in the beginning with John Morgan? How did you get started in music? Did you grow up in a musical family, John? How did you get started just interested in music and then the guitar?
Well, my family wasn't particularly musical. We just, they weren't against it. They weren't for it. I played in trumpet in high school band and all that. But then people of a certain age, there was a time when on a Sunday evening they were watching the Ed Sullivan Show, and they saw this group come on called the Beatles.
Yeah, I've heard of
them. About my age. You've heard of them? They seem to they've done pretty well, you know.
Yeah,
they've had
good,
a bit of
yeah.
an impact. And so, like, my buddies and I went, oh, my gosh, look at that. And it's kind of funny how it all starts. My brother and I shared a bedroom, and there was a guitar in there because my brother, at some point, my younger brother, said he wanted to learn an old song called Froggy You in a Courtin'. Now, I don't know whatever possessed him to want to learn this old folk song, but my folks or my grandparents or somebody had a guitar, so and it was in our bedroom. So I just thought, well, I got to figure this thing out. And I just started thumping away, and my first goal was to be the first one-fingered guitarist because I thought it looks awfully hard to use your whole hand. So I'm going to use one finger, so I would do these little guitar riffs because, they're, you know, the riffs are the cool parts of the guitar songs that catch your ear. So I learned about a half dozen little riffs. I thought, wow, this is going to be great, but it was kind of weird. I only had a callus on one finger, and then I eventually began using two, and then on from there. But my buddies and I, there was a girl up the street who played folk music, and I talked to her about this guitar thing, and she gave me an old book with folk songs in it, you know, Red River Valley and Oh My Darling Clementine and stuff like that. Well, that was enough to learn the chords from, but, I thought, Oh, my darling, who wants to play that stuff? The Beatles are in the world, the Rolling Stones, all these groups. And so anyway, somehow my friends and I conned our parents into buying us electric guitars and amplifiers, and we just started wailing away. I mean, you know, there's not even any concept of an internet, and the town I was in was really pretty small, and there were no guitar teachers that I was aware of. So we would just, you might say, drop the needle on the record and sit there and try to make what you're doing match up with what you're hearing. And there was one fellow who was older than me who played guitar, and he showed me the introduction to Johnny B. Goode. So I thought, wow, this is great. And so it was just, and that's kind of how it all started. And, you know, you're a bunch of young guys and you have a band, and then that band breaks up and you form with another couple guys, they have another band. But yeah, basically played guitar through high school. We would rent a gymnasium, or churches have like a social room or something like that. We would rent that, charge our friends a quarter to 50 cents to come and sell pop and potato chips. And you know, it was kind of like a part-time job, and not something we got rich at, but the musical thing is you make enough money so you can buy more equipment.
Right.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of where it started, playing what would now be called classic rock.
Now, you were talking about Gallipolis. That's where you grew up. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. My mother and father-in-law, who just moved in with us a couple of months ago, they're from Rio Grande, right outside of right off of Route
sure.
35. Yeah, when we Gallipolis
yeah.
was. Yeah, Gallipolis is the big city, John, so that's where
they
would go.
Okay, that's a big city.
Yeah, and we'd go to Point Pleasant, right across the river there.
Sure.
And talk about that, because sometimes when I'm talking about music and I'm talking about with other people, musicians, how geography has something to do with songwriting and how that what you grew up the music that you grew up in and just the environment. I mean, you're right there on the Ohio River, there's got to be a lot of things going on musically. And all of this was there, but then you were amazed by this, these mop tops from across the ocean that came in, you know, that had this incredible sound. Talk about what were the mixes that came into John Morgan's mind and some of the things from the area you lived in, and does that make sense about how you can kind of back and think about that?
Yeah. Well, what was interesting, it was that Gallup Place had one radio station, and the radios that I had could only pick up one station. And so my folks had a hardware store, and my job in the summers and after school was to repair lawnmowers. Well, the lawnmower workbench and the radio were right in the same area. So what would happen in the summertime, in the morning, there would be a talk show. Now, this is before real talk radio, and this was literally the station owner's wife gossiping about what was going on in town. Hey, did you hear what the Joneses did? So that would be the morning show. And it was, in retrospect, it's just hilarious. But and then around 11 o'clock, they would start with the gospel hour, bluegrass gospel, and then it would go into country music and then all this stuff. And as a kid, I'm going, wait, I want to hear rock and roll. I can't stand this stuff. I don't want to hear Johnny Cash. I don't want to hear Hank Williams. But yet, that's my job. I'm standing there by the lawnmower, and that's our music for the store. And but what happened is, what's nice, in the summer, those old radio stations, their license would allow them to broadcast in the long days of summer. They could broadcast longer, and then they would get to some rock and roll. But what it was, in those days, it was nothing like, you know, now you get Sirius or something like that, and you lock on to the blues station or the 60s or the 50s or whatever you want to check out. Back then, the Beatles would come on, and then there'd be the Fifth Dimension, you know, which would be this lovely harmony singing, and then there'd be Motown songs, and then there would be, you know, just this rolling thing. Man, you might, if you were lucky, you might get to hear Jimi Hendrix. And that would all be just part of the radio because that's what the young people liked. And so all that stuff kind of went into the cooker, but the stuff I wasn't thrilled with was the country stuff, and yet now that's the stuff I often end up playing at the hospital. When I went off to college, I went to Marietta College, and there I got exposed to classical guitar, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, how do they do that? And then blues guitar, you know, the old country blues with the finger-style stuff. I go, this is fantastic. How does that? So I was being influenced by all these things. But interesting, probably before I did anything musically myself, my folks took our family. We went to Ripley. There was a big art festival there. And I'd never been to an art festival. And this was back in the day when you could tell your kids, you know, go do what you want to do. Be back here before it was time for us to leave. So they
here's a dollar. See you later.
Yeah, well, exactly. They gave my brother, sister, and I a little bit of money and said, come back here at such and such a time. So I just wandered around, and I remember there was a cinder block building, and inside the building there were people playing hammer dulcimers. And I just, you know, it was a hot day, and I went over in the cool shade of this building, and I just sat there and listened to these hammer dulcimers. And I'd never heard anything like that in my life. And just as a kid, I remember thinking, I don't know what the music in heaven is like, but I think it might be like this.
Oh, wow.
It was just
the
most beautiful experience, that real bright and cheery sound. And that was the first really significant musical experience that I ever had. And at that time, I wasn't even playing the trumpet in band. I don't know if I even played the flutophone at that point. You know, all those kid things they start you out with. But I remember there was something there that just really spoke to me.
That's awesome. And I was at the Ohio State Fair once, and I heard this group of musicians, John from Peru, and they were playing these incredible flutes and drums. And I had the same experience you were talking about. It was like, wow, I can't not listen to that. I have to go over and listen to these people. And it was beautiful. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I think is so encouraging and so amazing about music, how that, you know, you can you can be from anywhere, or like you said, you know, there's no discrimination. There's no, it's just a language for everyone. And I think that that's so incredible.
Yeah.
So when you were, okay, so you're a young person and you go to Marietta College, then did you start playing the guitar then? When did you start playing the guitar, and when did you get to a point where you thought, okay, this is what I want to do?
Oh, well, probably when I was, I started playing when the Beatles came out in 1964. So I think I was probably 11 years old doing that. And, you know, we had the bands, went through high school and played that. And well, here's a funny story. So I played music all through high school. The band, you know, we made a little money, and, you know, over the years you make some money and you go, oh, this is... So I thought, when I go to college, I'm going to be a music major. Well, I went to my very first music theory class, and the professor said, okay, I just want to get a feel for where everybody is on this sort of thing, and so here's a little thing I'd like you to do. He gave us each a paper with 12 musical stabs on it, and he just said, write out the major scales in each of the keys. And he might as well have told me, why don't you just climb up in that tree and fly up to the moon? I went, scales? You know, yeah, I've heard of that. I know there's things like called scales because we were all self-taught. I mean, I was self-taught, my buddies. And music theory, I thought, yeah, I've heard of music theory. I know there's something called, but, And so what happened, from playing trumpet, and here's the thing, I wasn't that good of a reader in trumpet. I always was in, like, I was in the first chair trumpet, but second chair in the first chair section. And because my buddy, John Thomas, was always a better reader, so I would have to hear him play it, and then I could fake it after him.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So when this guy asked me, the professor asked us to write these scales, I remembered, okay, C, no sharps or flats, and I think you draw a line underneath the staff. So I drew a C scale, I wrote in a C scale, and that was it. I left my paper there. I withdrew from that class, and I signed up for English literature.
And oh, wow.
So that's the experience of my musical training in college, aside from many jam sessions and gigging with other musicians and playing in the college days and that sort of thing. So
okay, so where did it go from there? So when the formal part didn't click, so
fortunately,
Morgan go from there?
Okay, in my senior year, I had a car, my grandmother's old car. She got a driver's license when she was in her 60s, so she never drove it. So I said, John, why don't you take the car? So as a senior in college, and just joyriding, and I rode through Parkersburg, because it's just a little south of Marietta. And as I'm going down the street, out of the corner of my eye, you know how you tune into certain things? There was a little sign on the front of the storefront that said, The Guitar Shop. Pull over, go in, and here's a guitar shop. But, you know, and I'm from a town with no music stores, so I was like, whoa. And I go in, and there are all these guitars hanging on the wall, but it's weird because they're all classical guitars. And I'm going, whoa, this is strange. So it turns out, the teacher there, the guy, was a highly accomplished classical guitar player, and that's what they taught. So I thought, well, I don't know anything about classical guitar, but I do know I sure like the guitar. So I took about 6 months of classical lessons, and in that process, you know, I learned how to read music, and, you know, the old saying, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, and if you teach him to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. So I learned enough about how to read guitar music, not tab, but real music, and that I was able, that after I graduated from college and my wife and I got married, and we moved up to Akron for a number of years. And so by that time, I knew how to get music and to read it and to learn how to be my own teacher. When we landed in Akron, we were up there and didn't really have too much of a game plan, except that I was going to study classical guitar at the University of Akron. It was the only place I knew of on this side of the Mississippi that had any kind of guitar program. I had already graduated with a degree in urban studies, but, you know, here I am wanting to get a degree in guitar. So we go up there, and I had auditioned for the guitar professor and over the phone, but then I met him in person, and he said, okay, you know, this is what we do in our program, blah, blah, blah. I said, but there's just one thing you need to know. If you study with me, you only play classical guitar. You can't play electric. You can't play folk. You can't play. And then he went on to list every style of music that I enjoy. He said, so if you're going to play with me, you have to be serious about classical guitar. And right. I said, thank you. I'm gone. I'm not going to do that. So okay. Here I am. My wife and I are married. We're living in Akron. And we're kind of scratching our heads. Why are we here? What are we going to do? And we were very fortunate. We went to a concert that there was a church up there that had contemporary Christian music. And we went and we heard a guy named Randy Matthews. But the opening band was a group called Psalmistry. And when I heard him play, I thought, oh, my gosh, this is the most beautiful music. And it was all original. It was, you know, they had a similar background to mine, very eclectic between rock and folk and blues and what have you. And to make a long story short, my wife and I opened for them on a number of concerts, and finally they invited us to join the group, and we were part of that for, you know, what, like 6 years.
Wow.
We played coffee houses up in Akron at that time. Well, all across the country, there were coffee houses were the hip thing to do. And so we would play 2 and 3 coffee houses a weekend, and then one thing led to another. We ended up playing in youth detention homes. So we would probably once a month, there were 3 different detention facilities that we would play at. And so we did that for a number of years.
So from there, and you started, okay, so where did you learn the finger style, John, that you're teaching people now?
Yeah, well, sometimes I jokingly say I just kept losing my picks, so I had to learn how to play finger style. But when I was
down the hole of the guitar, that's where all mine went, right down the hole.
Right. Yep. The teacher there was a fellow named Bill Powell, and he introduced me. He got me started on real good classical technique, the basics, the Giuliani finger picking exercises, and a number of pieces by Bach and stuff like that. So what happened? I just began really digging in and studying that. Now, at the same time, all this time, I'm writing original music too, and instrumental and songs with words and one thing and another. And the group that we're playing in, we do original music, and a fair percentage of the songs we did were things that I had written. And so, you know, I'm just combining all these things because, you know, we've talked about a number of musical influences that you asked me about. And so all those things, you know, I think the thing of being an artist or musician or really any kind of artistic expression, as you go through life, you're exposed to a lot of these different things, and then you jumble them up, and fortunately, my memory isn't good enough to get them exactly. So I kind of half remember them and half goof them up, and then that goof them up part is the part that says, oh, I wrote that. I didn't remember that song correctly, and I stole from here, and I put this blues lick with this classical thing, and then I learned a jazz chord the other day, and you roll all that together, and pretty soon you kind of develop what you would call as your sound. And so I was, you know, I was always studying and playing on my own. You know, I think, and again, in any artistic pursuit, if you don't want to just be copying somebody, you have to learn how to be your own best teacher. And so that means just borrowing, you know, ideas, looking, listening, seeing live music wherever you can, and pulling all that together and remembering the best of it and doing what you can to incorporate that into who you are.
And then you take that talent and then you start teaching other people. And when you're giving guitar lessons, John, and you're teaching young people how to play the guitar, how do you incorporate the fact that they have to really take it seriously and study and learn things, but they also have to be creative? How do you blend those things together?
You've been doing this for a while. You've got some good questions there. Well, because the thing with you would meet all these different personalities. Again, I've taught, you know, professionally now, most of my time is the hospital. I don't have a whole lot of students on my roster right now. But there have been times when I had, the peak of it, I had 55 students in a period of, like, every 2 weeks. There was kind of a cycle, half-hour lessons and blah, blah, blah. So I've really worked with a lot of different kind of people. And what you have to do is you have to, and they may not even know this consciously, but you have to find out what's their motivation. You know, hey, how come you want to play the guitar? Well, I don't know. It looks like fun. Well, did you ever hear a song that you liked? Well, yeah, there was this one song. And so what I've tried to do, I mean, you can go get a book and you can say, okay, we're going to start on page one and we're going to work our way through here. But since that's not how I learned, I don't find that too motivational. Now, you can get a very cookie-cutter sort of education that way, and maybe a very thorough and practical education that way. But I think what I've always tried to do is find out what a person's motivation is and then link into that. And then you bring in material that's appropriate for their skill level. So if they're first just learning how, you might just teach them how to do a riff for a little song, or you know, you're going to start out with your basic chords, a G, a C, a D, E minor, and find out, well, do you want to sing? Well, yeah, I think I want to sing. And so you get them doing songs and getting that sense of rhythm and learning how to change chords smoothly and that sort of thing. And then if they say, well, you know, that picking stuff that you do, I'd like to kind of do that. So then you start them on, you know, there's Travis picking is kind of a American by way of African kind of style picking that Merle Travis popularized and Tommy Emmanuel and people like that. Or if they want to do folky picking, you can go with that. Or then the classical picking, I mentioned earlier Giuliani, the Giuliani exercises. I think, you know, there are different things I go, oh, I can see if when somebody's finger picking, I can kind of tell if they have studied it, or if they're just kind of, you know, hunting and picking and kind of dog paddling the best they can on their strings.
Right.
Because Giuliani gives you these really good and structured ways to coordinate your fingers. And then if you take that and you move it over into blues music or whatever, your fingers kind of already know what to do, but you're just going to get a little funkier than if you're playing classical music. And so it's just kind of that thing of tapping into what a person wants. Because parents, you know, what's a parent going to say? How long should my child practice this week? But my goal, you know, I grew up with the kind of thing when I was, you know, again, trumpet lessons. Here's a piece of paper, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You need to practice 30 minutes every day and write it down and date it when you do that. Well, you know, that is very, to me, very non-motivational. What I try to do, if I can hit that sweet spot where this young person or this adult or whoever it is wants to learn this song, and if I can get them hooked up with the right song, I don't even need to tell them to practice at all. They will go for it. And if I can get something that just is right at the edge of their ability and just pushes them a little bit, they will jump in there. And I say to the parents, I want to get them doing the kind of things that's going to make you have to come in and say, hey, put your guitar down. You got to make your bed sometime today, you know, or do your homework or something. So I think what I try to do is find that spot that where the internal motivation comes from. And it seems that's worked pretty well over the years.
Oh, that's a great point. I really like that. You're taking it and you're kind of melding the two. Okay, they got to work hard. You've got to really practice, and you've got to be serious about it. But you've really got to want to do it. And
exactly.
Yeah, and that's so cool because then you're getting kids that, like my nephew right now, is a junior in high school, John, and he's really starting to get into guitar. And he was like blowing my mind on Thanksgiving talking about bands that I knew of and that I liked, and I didn't know he did. And it was like he's saying, well, I just want to have this sound. I want to and I thought, man, that's like the coolest thing ever. You just, because
exactly.
That's what, yeah, but when you and I were both watching the Beatles at that time, it was a magical moment because we were thinking, okay, so that you're hearing that, but you're feeling it, and you're thinking, man, that music is so alive, and it's our music. What do you think of that with today when you're talking to kids and you're teaching them some of the roots music and the Americana music, which is very famous and popular right now, but you also want them to feel like they're current. You know, it's like we're not like when you're talking finger style guitar, I think of some of the people that I like the Reverend Gary Davis and Doc Watson and people like that.
Yeah.
And how do you integrate that in, John, into teaching these young people? Okay, here's this guy that I believe Gary Davis was blind, which, I mean, how hard would it be to just play the guitar anyway the way he did, and let alone now you're blind? Well, actually, Doc Watson was blind, I think. So I picked two blind guitarists.
Yeah.
Just how does...
In the case of both of them, it was kind of this... Well, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I'll get back to your question if I remember in a second. But both of them, they were blind. Reverend Davis went blind at about 3 or 4 years old. And Doc Watson, I think, may have been born blind. And they're like, oh, my gosh, how are these guys going to ever be able to support themselves? And at the School for the Blind, I think for both of them, they said, well, let's try music. And both of them had a real ear for it and fingers for it, and they just played it. And it came out of their heart. And when you listen to their music, it's so real and so genuine. I mean, the Reverend, Gary Davis, the Rev, as his students often called him, he would play 8 hours or more a day outside the tobacco auction houses for tips. So here you are, you're making your living on the street. How difficult it's going to be for somebody to rob you? Not too difficult, but he, you know, had an ear to keep his ear out if people were trying to take his money and stuff. But here he's playing and singing on the street for 8 hours a day. And, you know, he's just iconic. His ability, his skill, phenomenal. And Doc Watson's story is a little different. You know, he played and the whole bluegrass and country music and just became such a smooth picker and singer and entertainer. And it's just phenomenal. But, you know, interesting to your point there, I've had so many young people come to me now, you know, in the last few years, and I'll say, what do you want to learn? And, you know, there was a period of time when I was teaching a whole bunch of young girls, and, of course, they all wanted to learn Taylor Swift, and that's fine. And then, you know, young guys would come, and they'd want to learn Imagine Dragons or whatever. But then mostly what I've had is people say, well, this may sound strange, but I like the Beatles. I go, really? How'd you hear about them?
Yeah.
Well, my parents play that stuff. And so the good part is that music of any period doesn't have a time stamp on it. There's no expiration date. Now the music will go bad after 5 years. And so if it's good, it's good. But what happens, we all kind of imprint. You know, you and I grew up here where we go, oh, man, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, all that kind of stuff. That's the best music ever. I'm so glad. Here's a funny story. I was telling my wife, this has been a number of years ago, I said, boy, I feel so fortunate to grow up with the musical influences, the Beatles. And I said, I just feel sorry for kids today who don't have that kind of thing. No less than a week later, I was in line someplace, and there were two young guys ahead of me. And one of these guys was saying the exact same thing to his buddy. He said, boy, I feel sorry for young kids these days. They grew up with this music they hear now. It's not like the music that we grew up with. I'm so glad I grew up when Pearl Jam was the top of the heap. And I'm going, Pearl Jam, they're like little kids. They're like newcomers on the scene. But yet, every generation imprints to that music because as you grow up, that's your sound.
So true.
And so I think, you know, it's always a challenge to appreciate that other people, younger people especially, can link into their sound, and that means as much to them. And if they appreciate our music that we grew up with, that's great too. And then, of course, we need to learn how to appreciate their music, even if it isn't particularly our cup of tea. And because there's always good music. The thing is, humans are creative, we're musical, and there's always good music being written. Now, that doesn't mean it's always going to make it on the pop charts, because especially in the last 15 years, that's obviously highly commercially driven. But if you look around, you can always find real music that isn't written by machines or by committees or, you know, all those sorts of things. And you can find music that really represents people's hearts and lives. And I think that's what connects. That's the kind of music that connects with folks.
Well, John, thank you so much for being on the show. We've ran out of time, but thank you so much. I appreciate what you're doing. If you want to know more about John, go to morganguitar.com. Thank you, John. Have a great evening.
Thank you, John.
And
you too.
Have a happy holiday.
Thanks for inviting me.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to John Talk Radio tonight. And we'll all talk to you later. Thank you.
Bye-bye, John.